You're listening to the Cash and Burn podcast, and I'm your host, Brandon Metcalf. Join me as I interview and have conversations with founders and leaders about the greatest obstacles and challenges they've faced while building their businesses. Learn how they overcame them and ultimately what made them successful. The podcast is brought to you by Place. Place is a B2B SaaS customer subscription management, billing, forecasting, and metrics platform powered by Salesforce. Growing SaaS businesses use Place to better align their revenue and finance teams so they can boost revenue growth and retention, manage renewals, collect cash faster, and make more informed decisions all directly inside of Salesforce. Hey everyone, welcome back to Cash and Burn. Today we're doing a bit of a special episode where I went out and found two of my favorite guests that have been on before and wanted to have a bit of a different conversation about the joy of 2023 and how that sets us up for 2024. So why don't we start by, like, Jeff, do you want to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. So Jeff Cotton, I am the CEO of Alvaria, and we are a contact center software company that provides voice communications and all sorts of software that big customer service organizations use to interface with their customers. We're about 1,100 employees and over $300 million in revenue.
Nice. AJ.
QuotaPath, we are a Series B funded company backed by Insight Partners, Tribe Capital, HubSpot Ventures, Carta Ventures. We have a lot of players, the ATX Venture Partners in the Austin network. We are a sales compensation tool. We help organizations, SMB mid-markets, from design to payouts, understand really aligning company objectives to incentive compensation management. Maybe on the other side of the spectrum of Jeff's company, we're about 70 employees on the path of 10 million ARR, but have all the wildness that 2023 has that I'm sure we both share and can talk about during this conversation too, Brandon.
I feel you, because I'm on the smaller side too, and it's been a joy of a year, especially with I have the pleasure of having three companies, which I don't recommend. But it's a
wild. Don't think it's been that easy for the big guys either, by the way.
Well, we're going to hear some more about that for sure. But we also then, all three of us, have an Austin connection. Like, I live in Austin right now. Jeff, you're in Austin. AJ, you used to live in Austin.
I wish I lived in Austin. So people are like, when are you going to move back? I'm like, I don't know. Everyone's going further and further south. Everyone's living in
Drift. After this summer, you don't want to be back here.
Yeah, I know. I was working outside. It was 72 degrees today. And they're like, oh, it's been 85 days straight of 100 and whatever you all have down there. So
I'm looking right now. Our low today is supposed to be 78 degrees. That's our low.
That was at midnight. So it's okay. If you're outside at midnight.
Yeah, at least it's only supposed to be 103 today and not 108 like it's been. Well, thanks for coming on. You guys shared a lot of insight the last time you were on the show, which was really cool. But, you know, I think this year has been a year full of not only a lot of hype of the sky is falling, but also sometimes the sky did fall when we started seeing things like Silicon Valley Bank imploding and some of the other challenges we have, and, you know, interest rates being higher than they've been in a very long time, and just general difficult market for most of us in the tech world. So I'd love to hear from you guys, like, what's 23 been like?
Rosy.
Go, AJ.
It's been fun. I think the funny thing is, when we look back and when we had this conversation, Brandon, about SVB, because you brought up Silicon Valley Bank, we talked a little bit of, like, is this a harbinger of things to come? And it felt like a little bit of a one-off at that time. For me personally, it was frustrating because all of our money was tied up, and we were also part of this, like, Swift sweeps account situation that got talked about, but basically our money was in a money market and couldn't get it out. So we were kind of stuck. It also was challenging because I was in Park City at the time and with friends, and just, like, had to cancel the rest of my trip. Hilariously, SVB was holding an event in Park City, like right down, like at the Four Seasons. It was just like, okay, well, I almost went to, like, crash and be like, where's my money? But didn't do that. But, I think it's been fascinating in a lot of different ways. So if you think about where we sit in the world, we're in, like, this RevOps finance go-to-market space. And you think about where technology and tech teams have, like, made shifts, changes, and evolved. You think about the growth versus efficiency and the new business team, marketing, pipeline generation. Those have all kind of gone out of whack to what the metrics and the numbers that we're used to. And so it's been a lot of consulting. Of course, at the beginning of the year, we had a retention situation with a lot of rifts, a lot of downgrades in the companies that we served, especially at the SMB. We saw a lot of companies go out of business for sure and blow up in pretty spectacular ways. There was a new, forget the name of the Austin company that was one of our biggest customer renewals, but they went bankrupt. New Chip Accelerator in a pretty dramatic way. Yeah, but they also like had a very like public thing with their CEO. So you saw a lot of that throughout the year. For QuotaPath, raising our Series B at the right time was great. So on one hand, there's that. On the other hand, every company has a broken metric. And so every CEO that I know of is like has the board is having the board conversation on somewhere. And for a lot of companies, it's revenue retention, right? Then that's always been a hot button topic. I'm sure Jeff can talk to this as well. Both of us have been in many, many board meetings over the years. You have a retention issue. That's one that every board member is going to zero in on. And so seen a lot of that. That said, I've never felt more optimistic, at least about where we are. And I think the market plays into that. And it was just giving us a lot of clarity, a lot of focus on what we actually need to go out and do. And it's, you know, fewer things, which has been great. It's been a little bit easier the second half of the year as a CEO than it was the first half. That's my take on it. Jeff, you sure at 1100 people, whatever, you feel the same way, right?
what's giving you, before we get into Jeff though, what's giving you the optimism? Like what changed that now you're feeling optimistic?
I think in part of it is like my own world and my own people. I think, similar to most companies, we had a headcount reduction at the beginning of the year. The team like responded really well. I think we went deeper than I would have expected. It was my, honestly, 10 years of founder, operator, 10 plus years, it was 12 years. I've never actually done one. I've never had a headcount reduction. Trendkite didn't have that. We went from zero to about 300 employees before we sold. It was actually pretty smooth sailing. We had lots and lots of challenges in there. You know, early on, we were 2 weeks away from running out of money. We brought in a CEO later stage. That there's a lot of things that were just like a bit of a challenge. But overall, it was pretty smooth sailing. This year is definitely like pushed in ways that I'm learning and growing as an operator, which has been great there. And maybe that's just given me the optimism of just like, oh, this is new. It sucks, but it's new at least.
I feel you. I had to do layoffs at Place, and that was the first time I ever had to do layoffs. So it's not a fun feeling, not a fun process. Sorry, Jeff.
It is interesting to hear the consistency on layoffs. We did one at the very beginning of the year as well. And certainly, you know, most of tech seemed like, you know, they went through that for a myriad of reasons, right? Some for overhiring, some just to, you know, hunker down and, you know, prepare for potentially a recessionary period and that kind of thing. That to me is one of the big headlines, right? I mean, I remember Brandon, we last talked, it was like sort of, is it going to happen? Is it not? I don't think anybody's even asking anymore. It's kind of like, it must not be going to happen. I don't know. You know, I think
talking about it, we're like, whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's such a weird, you know, climate, I feel like, still post pandemic, right? Because while at this point, we all want to forget that happened and we feel a little distant from it, there's still so many impacts. I mean, the job creation still just blows me away, but I still think it's so much tied to, you had so much unemployment from that period and people have just slowly in different phases kind of gone back to work. And so despite all the tech layoffs, you know, most industries have held up pretty well. I remember we probably talked about, you know, sort of just that it would be choppy, some good, some bad. And I would say that's exactly what we have felt. You know, we actually had a really great, amazing start to the year. And then it's, you know, been some, you know, chop and fits and starts since then. We have seen the impact of, you know, a lot of organizations that are going through transformative change. As an example, Yellow Trucking was a big customer of ours, gone out of business, right? We've had, you know, three customers in the last 2 weeks that have announced mergers. So I do think that, you know, you're in this period where, you know, there's a lot of activity going on. You know, I certainly know that the VC market, you know, obviously has its own dynamic in terms of people getting rounds done and valuations and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, look, PE deals have been pretty slow. I think, you know, most strategics are pretty slow and cautious right now on M&A. You know, Salesforce obviously has slowed way down on M&A activity. And I think that has a trickle down effect on sort of the whole market. But, you know, look, I'll also toss out there, that, you know, and it's certainly public information. We had a security incident early this year, which looms big in my world, and certainly something that impacted us. And, you know, I'm not going to go into the specifics of that here, obviously, but, you know, what the whole industry saw really in the first 6 months of the year. I mean, you know, we were working very close with the FBI and the U.S. federal government through that whole incident. And, you know, the sort of de facto belief that, you know, sort of came out is that effectively Russia has declared a digital war on the West. And this is the way that they're basically trying to finance themselves right now in relation to all the sanctions that have been levied against them. And you can see that, right? I mean, these Russian activist hacker groups have become far more active than we've seen. They're getting more aggressive than we've seen. You're seeing organizations that have been hacked, you know, that you probably wouldn't necessarily suspected would have been hacked in the last year. I mean, Microsoft, I don't think we know the depths of where Microsoft's at right now on some of the recent things that they've experienced. So, you know, that certainly, I think, is a big theme that really is not being talked a whole lot about. And there was a big event in Las Vegas 2 weeks ago where there was a massive security event, and there was a ton of little events around it. And it's kind of interesting that it's sort of, you know, it's a kind of a hush-hush industry anyway, because people don't really want to have to, you know, talk about these things. But that, I think, when you look back in a few years, there's going to be a theme out of, you know, what's happened in the security environment this year, for sure.
Yeah, interesting. I haven't seen a lot of that. I mean, I'm kind of a little isolated around the security stuff because all of my companies are built on Salesforce. So that's just kind of like a given that we build and play in their framework. I mean, AJ, has it been big on you guys?
Well, I think it's actually interesting what Jeff's saying. Here's where the venture world and early stage startups and funding is struggled. I talked to a lot of founders on building platforms. Now, it used to be like 10 years ago, building a platform was actually pretty easy. It took us like 3 years to have password reset in Trendkite's world. Today, like, you need to come out of the box with SOC 2 Type 2 and all of the GDPR, of course, all the privacy things. Like, it's actually a lot of work to stand these things up. We just instituted Okta for our customers into, and of course we've always had single sign-on, but it wasn't, of course, like that's just all of this stuff has come out of the box with it. So cybersecurity as an industry, there's now thousands and thousands of companies that are doing different things in the security world. Jeff obviously knows this better than I do. It's interesting to see how organizations, like they're requesting the CIOs and of course the CISOs and like all of those folks, how they're coming more into procurement, which is where I'm seeing that hit is more on the delay on pipeline and the longer sales cycles for mid-market companies, which has not been the case. The other side of what I'll say from a venture standpoint, it is really interesting. And everyone has this like idea that PE, they have all of this just cash just like sitting on the sidelines. That's actually not true. It's not how this works. There was a great, I don't know if it was, I'm trying to think of who tweeted this out or X'd it out or whatever, but I think it might have been Chamath, talked a little bit about this idea that the money you have capital calls, right? Like you have capital calls and they don't have to spend that money if they don't want to. Where I think the action will start to happen, and Jeff actually just alluded to it, will be an M&A. And you're going to start to see, my guess is, either roll-ups within existing portfolios start to happen pretty quickly, or I would say that rounds get funded early next year for some of the like winners in the funds for portcos, that they're like, hey, go out and do some deals to roll up underneath. And that will be pretty interesting to see how that plays out. And I think that's where like a little bit of this quote unquote slowdown happens. But I would say that we're probably going to see 30 to 40% of venture companies that have been funded in the last 24 months potentially go away in the next 12. And Q1 was bridge round abound, meaning 40% of the rounds in Q1 were bridge rounds. And that's going to continue to dry up. So we'll see. I'm optimistic more. Maybe I'm just optimistic right now. I'm just trying to but I also know there's still going to be a lot of pain coming around the corner for the venture community.
Yeah, I've been talking a lot with the venture community because we, so I launched my newest company, Assemble, officially in January. And it's been, you know, my world with the three different companies, it's been really interesting to see how 2023 has played out, because Assemble has just been on a tear. Like, we have more pipeline than we can keep up with. Like, it's just crazy, which is the fun child I have, right? Of like the three children. And then, you know, Blueprint, the consulting firm, steady as she goes, profitable, clients paying on time, mostly on time, but just business going well and steady growth. And I was concerned that that was probably going to be the most challenging business this year, because I thought the consulting work would dry up, but it's actually bigger projects, clients extending contracts, clients not wanting to hire staff and instead of outsourcing to us.
Well, right. As soon as they make layoffs, they're going to go switch over to and that's the easy one to bury in the financial plan to get approved by the board. So you're like, yeah, consulting work's going up.
We have engineering offshore. So the cost is, it just makes more sense. And then Place, like, an interesting thing has happened with Place, where our win rate has gone way up. Like, our win rate's gone up about 5 to 6x, but our pipeline has gone way down. So every time we get a deal in pipeline, we're more likely to win that deal than we've ever been before. But getting pipeline with that company only selling to tech companies has been really, really challenging. And
what are you seeing as the driver there of the win rate? Like, is it a function of something internally, or are you thinking external conditions?
It's a combo of, you know, we did a lot of analysis of why we weren't winning deals and what was driving it. And, you know, some of it was we were just educating the market on what we were doing and how we were doing it. And the clients were never really wanting to buy in the first place. And that was because of our outbound. We did so much outbound before that we were just bringing people along on the ride, and we weren't calling it quick enough to actually exclude them or get them out of pipeline. So we really redefined our ICP. But I think the biggest thing happened is we did the layoffs. And we really restricted who we had and what they were doing. And now it's just focus of, like, we don't have the bandwidth. Either they're going to be a deal that really buys, or we can't spend time on them. And then we also shifted marketing, where we had a small, very small marketing team internally. And we shifted and went to agency and to really drive inbound. And the inbound has changed the game, where our inbound win rate is what's driving us completely to the next stage. Mm-hmm. But it's been a roller coaster just to see all those three companies. And then, you know, like Assemble, where we have a partnership with Salesforce, where our entire pipeline is Salesforce. So we don't even have a sales team. So it's been a roller coaster to see how the three businesses are just faring.
You know, it is interesting. You talked about layoffs, you know, at the beginning, and all of us, you know, did one, and the word you said a minute ago, focus, I feel like that's what it does, right? It forces you to have to be more focused, make better decisions, more efficient, et cetera. I mean, very similar for us. We've, you know, really improved the qualification for our sales pipeline as well. Now, funny enough, if you just look at the raw data, the win rates look like they went down because you did a lot of pipeline cleaning. But pipeline overall has come down. It's not hugely down for us. It's probably down about 15%. But you know, now, you know, certainly we are more focused on deals. That you've got a much better set of deals every single quarter that you know are the ones that you're going to win and you need to focus on.
Yeah, we've seen a lot more of partner engagement as well, as partners really leaning in and try to help and figure out how we can co-partner on deals to actually make deals happen. And I think that was a big change that I seen compared to 2022, where I didn't see a lot of that at all, at least in our world. We focus, like, all of the companies are focused in around Salesforce. So another interesting thing that has helped us is the challenges that Salesforce has had with their own layoffs and refocusing. And, you know, you miss your number, you're pretty much out. So we go through this mindset of, like, how can we help Salesforce sell more Salesforce, which is the partner approach that we're playing. And that's helped a lot. That's especially what's helping to drive Assemble to the success that it's having. AJ, are you guys doing a lot of partnership with QuotaPath?
Because you're used to, HubSpot, right? We're a HubSpot Ventures company, and there's still, if you think about HubSpot as an organization, you're like, oh, they know how to do partnerships, but they don't, actually, technology partners. They're very, very early to the game there. When you say partnership internally, you think of marketing agencies and how they were able to really use their marketing agencies as channels to deploy for marketing inbound. Today, their CRM actually makes up about 50% of their $2 billion revenue. Most people don't know that. I'll say Sales Hub, more importantly. And they're done fantastically well over the last 2 years in the SMB. So like the SMB CRM was traditionally like the pipe drives, the sugar, copper, close. There's a lot there. And I think they've helped consolidate and close the gap considerably. But they're only 4% of the CRM market today. And Salesforce is, I don't know, what is it, 36%, something like that. So they have a lot of ground to make up, more in the mid-market to up-market. So where we're seeing a lot of gains is some of the programming that we're doing with them. They're actually paying attention to. You wouldn't ordinarily think that a HubSpot would care about an organization of our size, but they do because we have higher fidelity around the data coming in and can actually give them intent data well before they see it, which is kind of funny to think about. Whether that's a change in CRM from HubSpot to Salesforce, or just like an opportunity from a, like, these folks are 100 people, 100 sellers, and they're using spreadsheets for their CRM. And that we see that a lot. So we actually have someone full-time on HubSpot CRM as a partner. And that's what our focus is, to build out a blueprint there. As far as like the question, it's a good question, because the FP&A world, right, there's a lot of opportunity in that space. We're just starting more to go into the office of the finance with things like ASC 606 and stuff that, Brandon, you're much more familiar with. But financial modeling and planning and capacity planning is where we're headed. And we'll see more partnerships in the finance world in 2024.
It's kind of interesting. We started off at Place doing financial forecasting and planning, and now that's not really what we do. Now we do RevOps. So we're kind of RevOps in a box. So we connect sales and revenue generating teams to finance teams by doing RevRec and billing and billing integration and all of that. And then now we do a revenue forecast. But we saw a huge decline in need of companies during 2023 wanting to buy FP&A. It makes sense as to why, because it's not as critical. One thing that prompted, though, from the conversation, I wanted to ask, like, I know for me this year, maintaining culture and maintaining internal excitement and team morale and focus has been challenging because, you know, hearing all the layoffs, doing a layoff on just the difficulties that we're all facing right now, keeping the team engaged in the same way has not been easy. Have you guys experienced that? If so, like, what have you been doing to manage it?
Yeah. So look at, you know, it once again, you know, Alvaria is in probably a little bit different stage than where you guys, this is a company that's been around for, let's call it 40 years roughly. And, you know, you're dealing with people that have been in this company in some cases 20 plus years, you know, themselves as an individual, and they've seen multiple rounds of layoffs, et cetera. And, you know, one of the things that I've learned, unfortunately myself, having done multiple rounds of layoffs through my career, is, you know, you got to get people moving on super fast. So we did a lot of work knowing that we were going to have to do a layoff that I think was somewhere around mid-January, and making sure we were really ready for the other side to pick people up, you know, acknowledge what happened, shake it off, and then get people super rallied around, you know, a really clear set of goals and objectives and a scorecard that, you know, we've reported out on all year long, very frequently, you know, doing many, 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 you know, communications. So we've tried to just really keep communication high, keep the goals clear. I use the same scorecard, and visually, you know, it's exactly the same. And, you know, we try to highlight good, bad every time. We've been bringing a lot of customers in so that our employees can really hear, like, hey, what is working? Make me feel good. You know, talk to me about some things that we've done well. And even customers that, you know, maybe have some constructive feedback for you, they'll give you that, but they always want to come in and praise you as well. I think that's been really effective for us. And we've just tried to do a lot of new things culturally. You know, I've been doing kind of in the vein of, let's have the serious hard talk, you know, small group sessions where you'll get a small group together and, you know, I'll prompt really, really tough questions that I know are probably on their mind, that may be scared to ask. And then you just kind of get the questions flowing, right? You talk about, you know, interest rates, they're up huge, right? We have loans. That's drawn more cash out of our business that we could have invested in other things. Let's talk about it. What does it mean? How are we dealing with it? How are we preparing for it? That way people just really feel a lot of closeness and transparency to kind of what's going on. You know, I would say that, you know, that clarity, that focus, having a really clear mission, reiterating it constantly, and doing some new things this year has helped our team really kind of move on and help culturally. I'll tell you one other thing I found a little bit interesting for us sort of culturally. This company historically has had some pretty high attrition rates. Our attrition's plummeted this year. Like, we're under 1%. And I think that's a combination of things. I think it's a combination of, you know, some things we're doing internally, but also kind of market. And, you know, certainly the tech job market, obviously, was a result of people doing layoffs, isn't as hot as it was, you know, certainly coming out of the pandemic and, you know, sort of when people were doing a tremendous amount of hiring and overhired. But I, you know, those have been some dynamics that have been kind of interesting for us. But I think that's also kind of helped people go, you know what, I'm going to hunker down. I'm going to, you know, dig into this company. I'm going to try to put myself into it. I'm not going to put my energy into looking outward and that kind of thing. But those have been some things that we've done to try to deal with it. AJ, I'd be curious, what have you seen?
Yeah, it's different with a 70-person company where I like have the personal relationships with a lot of the folks. I mean, and that's true. I think half of the company I've worked over multiple companies 5+ years, and so from a culture standpoint, it's something that like has an expectation of just being strong no matter ups and downs. But I think what Jeff said in terms of like the move on really quickly and the momentum aspect of it. And the focus is those are the things you just kind of keep right there. I think where I would say that been more bigger of a challenge over the last 4 years is just from a hybrid standpoint, it's still a very challenging piece of it. It just doesn't, I mean, I'm an in-person, just like that's a superpower of mine. I feel really good. It's not a micromanaging. I just push the team when I need to. If I needed to like actually go push, I can do it in person, and doing it from a home office just fucking sucks. Sorry for if that needs to get bleeped out, but like, it just is a challenge. And I think that's true for a lot of CEOs and that a lot of operators, right? And that's just like that's what's really frustrating. So culturally, we do an ENPS and it's been good and fine. And I think similarly, it's like this year is a part of that. But I guess like my own feeling around it is just like apprehension, because I'm just like, when can I ultimately really feel like the things that I've learned in my career for the first 15 years, I can go back to doing in a real meaningful way. And that I don't see coming back. And that's kind of frustrating, honestly.
Yeah. Like that's a miss. I don't know if it's ever going to be the same.
No, it's not. And so it's like, am I the CEO for tomorrow based on that? Because that's something that I like get energy from. And I like, you know, I miss greatly.
Do you get your leadership team together in person with any frequency?
Yeah, we do quarterly offsites, and that's been fantastic. Yeah. I think that like we have a great first team mentality, and I have really strong thought partners with my chief customer officer, Sarah Strope, who is just phenomenal. My VP of ops in Ryan Milligan, and he's, you know, from a sales leader standpoint. So like my growth leaders and then product and engineering. So I like a fairly condensed management team these days, which is great. But at the same time, half of those are in Austin and the other half are not. So it's just like, yes, 100%, Jeff. And I'm guessing you're the same way where like that's
been. Yeah, you're not giving me much hope, by the way. I was hoping your hope would feed off on me. Your optimism would feed off me. Well, like, because to me, if we're going to solve this, it's going to be through the startup community again, right? Like some company that is small and can really control this and get a, you know, initial group of people like we value being together again. And maybe it's not 5 days a week, 8 to 5, right? But it's 3 days a week, pretty regularly in an office, and you build a culture like that again. And then the people that are attracted to that type of an organization are going to say, okay, I'm drawn to that. I'm going to choose a company that values in-person, whatever, because man, as a big company, I can tell you it's going to be near impossible to ever get to a point, I feel like, where you can go back and say, we're mandating everybody back in the office. Number one, it's thousands of people. They spread to the four winds of the earth during the pandemic. And you know, you just, it's physically not even possible. And then from a recruiting perspective, I mean, you know, we know all these things, right? It's going to be really hard to do this, but I just feel like there's going to be some companies where that will become their differentiator and it'll attract the type of people that they really value that. Cause I agree with you. I'm an in-person type of leader as well. In my whatever 25+ years, whatever, of like what I've learned, it's hard. It is very different leading remotely than it is in person.
Well, and I think the startup community is really struggling with it. And I think it's a generational thing. I mean, I look at it in my kids, and as they're getting older and just how they communicate. And I think that that's true with our, And Jeff, you probably had this with your early days at Rackspace, where like at your sub 20 or sub 30 year olds, and you're all in the office and you don't have anything else to do. So you're like actually
they
like
love it
more together, and you love that. And I had that with Trendkite, 150 sellers. They're just like chaos. It was so much fun.
But, well, they all become friends. Like they become your closest friends.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's just not the reality of the situation anymore. And so like, we know in our heart of hearts that we have a productivity loss in that. And the startup community aspect of it is like, you're not built, like their hope is, oh, you could do that with three or six. But honestly, this, even the new crop of founders and entrepreneurs, they were built in a world where they open floor plans were like not something that they wanted. And they're actually looking at the situation as a positive from a leadership. It's the other side of it. So it feels like the worlds have actually kind of split even further in the last 2 years.
You know, people live in a lot of different places. So like for us, even as small as the three different companies are, there's no way we could do all in person because everyone lives all across the country. And we embrace that and we leverage that as we're hiring, saying, I don't care where you live, where can I find the best talent? We had an interesting thing happen with the place leadership team where through all of this, radical candor has become like, it's always been one of our core values. But now it's truly like, you can see people are radically candid with each other about where things are at, what's working, what's not working. And it actually, I think, bonded the leadership team who are all remote in a way that I could have only hoped that it was, because now they're just being real with each other. And, you know, I don't know if in person we would have got to that same level of candid.
Interesting.
Feel when you're not in person.
And was there anything that set it up that way? I mean, did you kick it off in some way where everybody felt that trust and that willingness to challenge and debate and be candid? I mean, there was anything that like bled it to there?
Well, a lot of that comes from me. I mean, I like debate. I don't like just yes or no. Like, let's get into like what's going on. And, you know, there's some probing of like, you know, how do you actually feel about that? What are you not saying in a meeting to get that going? But then at the end of the day, we're all a team. We're all trying to do the same thing. And then there's additional conversations you have after those meeting about let's debrief here. Let's talk about what happened. Let's talk about how you felt, how that person could have felt, like what were you trying to do? And there's more coaching on my side with the leadership team about, hey, you probably could have approached that in a little different way because this is how it came across. And yes, we want to be direct and honest, but we also still want to be a team. And especially when we look at like engineering and sales, and we've done a lot of product changes and like, how did those two get along and communicate? It's hard.
Always a challenge.
Yeah, but poking the bear, as you will, to get them to be frank, but then pulling it back in saying, you guys are actually trying to do the same thing, but it's certainly not coming across that way. And then letting them figure out how to communicate with each other has truly helped.
That's interesting. I asked that because we're doing quarterly offsites, you know, in person as you are, AJ. And actually, we just had ours 2 weeks ago and I brought everybody here to Austin. We went out to Dripping Springs, got a ranch. And, you know, we had for 2.5 days, you know, we cooked every meal together. You know, you're hanging out together late at night. And that to me has been one of the best catalysts for really enabling that much more candid, you know, let's have the hard debate, just get a lot of stuff out when you're all together. And then it allows you, I think, to operate a lot better and high performing as a team. I'm a big Patrick Lencioni guy. So of course we do the 5 dysfunctions of a team and all that good stuff. And I think that that's helped, but I was just curious if there's anything that sort of set it up that way. Cause I would say it was hard in the beginning, especially I've done quite a bit of leadership changes this year. And so it's kind of a new leadership team forming together and you might work with someone for 2 months before you ever physically meet them.
Yeah.
And I think that makes it a lot harder to have that radical candor as you described.
Jeff, that's a really good point you just brought up. A lot of companies are doing lots and lots of leadership changes.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to actually get accelerated. Here's what I think is going to happen. You're going to see a lot of CEO changes in the next 6 to 12 months. PE, like, here's why. PE, that's always kind of been part of the playbook, but it's going to go really far down into the venture community because a lot of these bigger funds, take Insight, for example, $90 billion fund, they did a lot of Series A when they haven't traditionally done that. And so those companies are probably still well-funded and you're going to take advantage of the cash balance sheet position that they're in. A lot of these companies have lost product market fit in the market that they were serving or part of it, and are searching for it. So you're going to have a very interesting dynamic coming up.
I think you're exactly right. You guys probably get a lot of the same calls I do. My gosh, in the last 2 months, the recruiting world has really heated up on CEO searches. Yeah, it is nuts.
Insane. More than I've ever seen. It's crazy. You set that up really well, AJ. I mean, so with the last few minutes we have on the show, how are you guys thinking about the rest of the year and then getting into 2024?
We're doing our financial planning earlier this year. We've already started it. That's one area that I think, good about the roadmap of what we have for the rest of the year, what we have to go out and achieve. I feel great about the team that we have, but really thinking about the innovation and where's the opportunity for in 2024 and taking advantage of when some companies are going to be leaning back, where can we lean in? And I honestly am just pretty excited about it. That's where the optimism comes from. If maybe the next 6 months are like so-so, but I'm actually looking at the next 18 months, and I'm sure Jeff's probably looking at the next 5 years in his world. So that's something that I think is just happening differently. And so we have an offsite coming up, and we'll want to coming out of that, get like pretty buttoned up around 2024, so that we don't have what I would actually say was a pretty challenging financial planning season last year for me personally, because I went through it for the first time, but not going to happen again this year.
Yeah,
I can actually relate to that. I think it was January, probably more technically February this year, before we had our financial plan this year, like actually fully locked in. And approved, and like you, we're started now as well. I will tell you, quick sidebar. I actually, Tenfold, which was my last company, was my smallest company ever, similar size to what you guys are doing now. And I have to tell you, the lessons around liquidity and thinking about every single day how much cash is in the bank, and like you run your business on a cash basis, serves you so well even at a large company, especially now, right? When look, we have probably a lot more debt than you guys do. And, interest rates, the way they've climbed, is a real thing. And what that does to you in terms of what you can invest in and how you have to think about planning for cash, inflows and outflows when you've got potentially big seasonalities like we do in our business currently, it makes you, sort of think about everything differently. So, yes, while we've got that longer multi-year horizon, we're really focused on next year and building a prudent plan. Like you, we've got a lot of exciting things as well from a roadmap perspective on product that we're super excited about, that I think is going to create some new opportunities for us sort of later into 24 as well. So actually pretty similar. And I would say it's sort of cautious optimism through the end of this year and probably even the first half of next year. And so we're building a plan that is around that more probably cautious side, that allows us to take advantage of, if you start to see bookings break out, in a particular quarter, you can, put your foot on accelerator. We have pivoted our business hard towards channel and partnerships. And, we're in a phase of investing in those right now. So like you, very much in planning mode right now for 24 with, I would call it, a sort of cautious, optimistic approach.
It's so funny you're saying cautious optimism, because the theme of my board meeting for Place 2 weeks ago was cautious optimism. Like, we have some pretty incredible momentum happening around the product and the interest in it, but still a little nervous as to what the rest of this year is going to actually look like and what's going to happen around just being able to build pipeline. But this cautious optimism theme is exactly where my head's at. So
there you go. It's resonating.
Well, thanks for coming on, guys. I appreciate you sharing the insight and sharing a little bit more of what's going on in your world. Hopefully people took a lot away from this, that we're all going to like lean towards AJ's optimism, I guess.
Where I started the call. Actually, I ended the call that way too. It's going to be great. We're all going to be cautiously optimistic headed into the next year.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for coming on. Everyone else, Cash and Burn comes out every Tuesday. So thanks for listening.